This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
See Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is sponsored by the Cleveland Clinic, the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, Island Pay, Fidelity Bank Bahamas, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Royal Star Assurance, and Scotia Bank.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. If you want to join us in calling today, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can text us at 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969, and that's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. So as I promised you yesterday, I'm going to test my patience today, to be honest with you, right? Because I am going to try to navigate an issue which even in economic circles, for some, it proves rather difficult to get across. But I'm going to try. I'm going to talk about money today, but I'm going to do something that I hope may answer the question, a question for you, or at least attempt to answer a question for you, which is, what is all this buzz surrounding cryptocurrencies and cryptocurrency trading? Now the Bahamas is in the spotlight because FTX, this major cryptocurrency exchange with 10 million users, is now as its headquarters in the Bahamas and going about building a $60 million headquarters and physical facility, is hiring up, and it's having a major conference, and there's all this buzz. The prime minister is talking about it, and everybody's talking about it. But what is this buzz about cryptocurrencies? I mean, like is cryptocurrency like the way the world is going to be fed? Is it the cure for cancer? Is cryptocurrency the way national economies, governments are going to pay off their debts? Is cryptocurrency going to be the way in which millions upon millions of unemployed people around the world are going to be employed? Like, what is cryptocurrencies going to be doing that's going to majorly change the world? That people are so gung-ho on it. What is it going to do? I mean, in the real world where you live and where I live, things matter because they affect us in real ways. Let me give you an example. You have a physical body. It has to eat. It needs water. It gets sick. It needs shelter. Is cryptocurrency the answer to some health issue we have? chronic health issue, diabetes, heart disease? Is cryptocurrency the answer to how we're going to lower the price of food in the Bahamas? And other places in the world, is cryptocurrency the way in which we are going to afford more Bahamians to have home ownership and have less debt in that ownership? Like, what is it going to do? We have a mind. It has to be educated. Is cryptocurrency going to be the way we educate our children? Send them to college? Provide them with new skills so that they can, in a capitalist society, earn income to be able to feed themselves and fund their dreams and aspirations? In a society, we have marriages and relationships and all these kinds. Is cryptocurrency the answer to the relationship issues we have? Is cryptocurrency the answer to the violence and crime that we've been so concerned about? Like, what is it about cryptocurrency that's going to help us? Is it going to reduce the global logistics supply chain issues that are driving up prices? Is cryptocurrency going to make free trade better or trade better? Why would a group of human beings be so excited about a digital currency? It ain't even real. Well, maybe we give you some answers to that today. Maybe we will. We give some answers to that. But notice what it's called. It's called currency. Cryptocurrency, as opposed to a physical currency. You've seen a Bahamian dollar. You've seen a U.S. dollar. Some of you have seen a euro. Some of you have seen a yuan, like me, Chinese currency. Some of you have seen a yen, like me. I've seen a yen. Some of you have seen the Jamaican dollar, like me. I've seen it. You've seen a Canadian dollar, like me. I've seen it. You've seen the German currency, that I've seen it, right? You've seen the Swiss currency, like me. I've seen it. So these physical currencies exist in the world. They are all produced by the state, issued by the central banks of states. They have all had their value declared by the government. The government says this thing isn't backed by any food or gold or silver anymore. It's backed by the word of the government. This is a dollar. This is $5. This is $20. This is $100. The government declared that. There's no intrinsic value in that piece of paper. None. Outside of the fact that the government issued it, you could probably use it when you go to the toilet. It has no intrinsic value. If you found a piece of gold on the ground right now, it has value in and of itself, you know, in a real way, but even that is questionable, right? So we have these physical currencies, and then we have these things called cryptocurrencies, right? What are they? What is this? What's the difference? What's money to begin with anyhow? And is money and currency the same thing? All right, let's see if we can help. Let's see if we can help someone. Back in antiquity, way, 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 way back when human beings had first started out, you know, foraging, you know, we would go about hunting for our food, and, you know, finding some grass that maybe was edible. And basically every man was for himself and his little grouping, you know, family grouping. And they went out and they hunted their food and gathered their food, and that was it. No issues. You know, You eat, you fed yourself. If you didn't feed yourself, you starved. That was it. You didn't look to anybody else for any supply. But then when human beings started settling down, mostly near rivers and so forth, they started settling down and creating populations of communities, right? In as their communities grew, the demands to feed the community became more and more. And these communities were spread out over different places. And some of the communities may have focused on raising sheep, cattle. Some may have focused on growing vegetables and so forth. And someone at some point got the wise idea, well, you know, I need some corn. And the community, the tribe across the road have corn. And I see them looking for sheep, and I have sheep. So maybe I will go and trade my sheep for their corn. And so they would go and negotiate, and the guy would say, okay, for one sheep, I'll give you 3 bushels of corn. And hence, trade began. Trade began. And so that's what happened over, you want chicken, I have chicken. You want sheep, I have sheep. You trade me 100 chickens for one sheep. You want some building to be done in your village, well, I will build a building for your village. If you give me some salt or some sugar, this sugar is labeled. Now, you sir, I don't know what's going on. I'm hearing some sound. What's going on? Yeah. All right. So that is what we call the barter system, B-A-R-T-E-R system. Barter is trading goods for goods, trading goods for goods, right? And that prevailed in the world for quite some time. But then something happened, because the more the populations grew and the more people wanted more things, et cetera, well, it became a little difficult to barter, because I want you to imagine a woman going to a food store, in quote, in the next village, needing eggs, cheese, rice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and having to barter with all these various people in the marketplace, but then having to carry all the sheep and goats and what have you she needed to go to market, well, that's a little clumsy, and it can't create much efficiency in trade, especially if the trade needed to take place some distance away. So some brilliant soul came up with the idea, okay, tell you what, let's create something that could represent a value that both people could accept, and then we can put the value of a sheep or the value of a goat or the value of some corn in that. And so we will use that as a means of trading or exchanging between us instead of having to carry the actual thing. So I'll pay you this amount of the thing. It could have been a shell. It could have been some piece of jewelry or some piece of metal or some rock. It didn't matter, because we agreed that we would use it and we would go and carry that to market. And so when you needed your sheep from me, you would come to me and bring me back some of those things we agreed to use as a medium of exchange, and we would then exchange those between us. And hence the development of currency. Let's call it a kind of currency. Not money, but currency. Why? Because we were creating this medium of exchange between us. We were creating something that was portable. We could use it and charge for it. We were using something that was mostly durable because it could last over time. If it was a piece of jewelry or shell or something like that, and it was divisible because you could have 4, 5, 6, 7, 800 shells and so forth and so forth, we could use that. And that was what replaced the barter system. And then you go back to Egypt, and those, some may even argue China. And what started to happen was the state of Egypt, way back in antiquity, decided that, you know what, we could use minted coins. The state could make sure that there was something bona fide used to provide this kind of currency for trading. And so you could see way back in antiquity, you could find them having archaeologists having discovered these coins that were available. And those were the early makings of what we now have as our currency system, where we got more sophisticated with it and we made these pretty paper documents and metal coins and what have you that became the currency. Now, there was a time when the currency, so an actual dollar, represented a certain weight in gold. Okay? And so the money was backed by gold. Now, the currency was backed by gold. So whereas the currency is currency, gold, money. There's a difference between currency and that difference. Well, all currencies, as I was just saying, they are a medium of exchange. So you have to be able to trade them between people. People have to accept them as a means of trading between them. All currencies are a unit of account, meaning you can use it to signify an accounting of value for something. So $5, $20 can say, you can have five signify something that is worth $100, right? So, and if you put it in the bank and you take to the bank $20, $25, $20 bills, the bank has to put on their ledger that they are indebted to you for $100, because that's a unit of account. And then it's portable, right? Can you not move your money around with you, put it in your pocket, put it in your wallet, put it in your purse? So it has to be able to do that. It has to be divisible. So you can take the money and divide it up into dollars and $5 and $3 and $20 and $50 and $100 even $1,000, $10,000 if you want, depending on where you are in the world, right? And it has to be divisible. So now you can take a $20 bill and divide it by five and get four, divided by four and get five, divided by 10 and get two. You can do that. It's divisible. It has to be fungible. It has to be interchangeable, meaning that when I take the currency to Abaco, it's the $5 is the same in Abaco as it is in New Providence, as it is in Grand Bahama. That's called fungibility. If it's a US dollar, it's the same in the Bahamas as it is in the United States, as it is in Europe, even if it isn't going to buy exactly the same thing, but you know it is a $5 bill, US dollar bill, right? So that's called fungibility. That's a currency. Now money is all of those things. All of those things. Money is, you know, used as it's a unit of account, it's portable, it's durable, it's divisible, it's fungible. But it has one other thing that currency doesn't have, which is it's a store of value. Money actually stores value. So gold, as I indicated, silver, as I indicated, is a store. Well, if you put $100 in the bank, put $100 in the bank and go get that same $100 to spend 30 years from now, do you think that $100 could buy the same amount of things 30 years from now as it bought now? Answer is absolutely no. There is no currency on planet Earth, no fiat currency on planet Earth, no currency on planet Earth that has ever retained its value that way. None whatsoever. None. Don't y'all, don't text me, don't write me trying to argue this point. Because of inflation, all currencies lose their value. All. That meaning they lose their purchasing power over time. That's not true for gold, though. That's not true for silver. The amount of things that gold and silver could buy 10 years ago is abundantly more now than it could 10, 20, 30 years ago. So it's able to store value that way. That's the difference between currency and money. Money does everything currency does. So you could divide up gold. You can use it as a unit of account, right? As it currently does. You can, it's portable. It's a little heavy, but you can move it around. It's fungible, gold in England, gold in Germany, gold in the US, same gold, right? And it is a store of value. That's the additional thing it does that currency can't do. Okay, so that's the difference. So I know we use it interchangeably and say, oh, bring me my money or give me my money. What you really mean is give me my currency. That's what you really mean. Give me my currency. Right. The more currency you put out there, and the less valuable that currency becomes. That's it, right? Let me prove it to you. Let's suppose every human being on the planet received $1 billion more dollars than they have today. $1 billion more. You know what happened? Everything in the world would become abundantly more expensive. And the $1 billion would be worth squat. Why? Because people would have so much money to spend, they'd be bidding up the price of everything. And the price of everything would mean that demand would outpace supply by an abundance. And that would cause a gridlock in the system. And that gridlock in the system would only result in a collapse of the economies. And therefore, the monies essentially in the end would be worth nothing. Don't ask me. You don't have to ask. You don't have to debate that with me. You can see that in history, human history, where countries went ahead and printed money and printed money and printed money and printed money. And at the end of the day, people were paying $10 million for a loaf of bread. So you can't just print paper money. And don't somebody tell me, oh, the U.S. does that. That's nonsense. Not true. The U.S. does not just print. And somebody asked me yesterday, why can't the Bahamas just print money like the U.S.? Well, your question actually had a wrong premise. The Bahamas can do that. Any country could print money. Any country, if you want to pay Canada to print more of your money, they will do it. They just take the order, just like any order, and they'll print up as much money as you want. The problem is, if you do that, that money's value decreases because it has to have something that makes it tradable. So if you have a boogie load of money, you still got to convert it into US dollars to buy US products. Well, where's the US dollars going to come from? You still have to get it. Having a bunch of Bahamian dollars isn't going to help you if you can't buy US dollars with it, right? And you have to have the US dollars in order to buy it because you have to earn it. So that doesn't solve your problem. So the Bahamas can print as much money as it wants, like any other country can do so, but countries don't do that because they understand the fundamental economic principles underlying it. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Fidelity. I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem. Just max out the credit card or top up my loan. Big baller. Until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I bank wherever I want, thanks to Scotia Online and Mobile. I garden, I bank from my living room. I also bank from my kitchen. No need to wait in line. Now when I bank with Scotia, I bank on my own time. Seniors, you too can bank your way any time of day without ever going into a branch. Find out more. To get started, visit bs.scotiabank.com/digital seniors.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. If you want to call us, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Someone says, what is money? Money is what money's worth. That is true. Money is what money is worth, but there are some things that better qualify as money because of its ability to retain worth than many other things. And one of the reasons why gold and silver is like that is because there's a finite amount of gold and silver in the world, a finite amount. I wonder if you understand and realize that all the gold and silver that you are familiar with were created in the stars. All of it. The only power sufficient enough to create the element gold and silver is a power produced in a supernova, the explosion of a star. In other words, the death of a star gives birth to gold and silver. And so all the gold and silver on planet Earth was created through a supernova. And so you aren't going to get any more gold and silver created on planet Earth than what was created on planet Earth when that supernova gave rise to the origin of the Earth. So on that basis, the rarity and scarcity of gold, It's and the willingness of people to see it in the light that it is, that untarnishing and enduring metal gives it a kind of inherent value, kind of, right? And so that's why you've seen people start to think, okay, boy, let me put my trust in this gold and put some of my value in it because over time it might not mind you in the end. If everybody agrees that gold ain't worth squat, then it ain't gonna be worth squat. that's the nature of human beings. Especially if you heard tomorrow the whole world is gonna end, you could have all the gold in the world. It ain't gonna be worth nothing to you then. All right. See, thanks a million. You are such a wealth of knowledge. And this topic today is exactly what is needed by all and sundry of us. I am all ears. You're welcome. I'm trying my best to get this information to you. This text says, great show as usual. Mr. Lang, don't give no one no bright ideas because I have said company and I, SD company and I draw. Okay, I you have to write that again for me because I'm not quite capable of understanding that. Okay, so I see now that there is a difference. Slight, however, meaningful, however, difference between gold and silver. If you had had your, if you had been holding gold versus US dollars in your holdings of assets, you would be abundantly better off today than you are because the gold has appreciated, US dollar has depreciated in value because of the cost of living increases, the inflationary developments over decades. Okay. So most of us, we are able to hold these currencies. We get paid in these currencies. We go and purchase in these currencies. And we are doing so on the good faith of the government. If the government of the Bahamas started doing things that absolutely eroded confidence in the Bahamas' economy to grow, confidence in the Bahamas' state to remain stable and civil and viable, the Bahamas' currency would not want to, no one would want to hold it, not even Bahamians. Okay, if things, something happened in the United States of America or China or where we have many manufactured, those things started to explode in prices. We don't see an explosion now. We see an increase in prices, a sharp increase relative to what we are accustomed to, but we don't see that kind of explosive increase in prices. If we saw 50%, 80%, 100% increase in prices such that everything you now buy is three times what it used to be, cars and clothes and food, your dollar would be worth squat because unless you could earn that US dollar equivalent, earn it in the abundance more that you would have to earn it to pay for three times the amount of three times what you would ordinarily pay for the same quantity, almost all of us would be impoverished in a circumstance like that. Because that our what would be a $50,000 salary might now be worth 300% less, 50% less than what it is worth today in purchasing power. And we would all be the worse off. So a great deal of the willingness of people to hold your currency, to use your currency, to exchange in your currency, depends on the policies of the government that issues the currency through its central banking system. And that is why the central bank don't play things that could undermine the financial system, the things that can undermine the Bahamian dollar. They don't play with that. In particular, the earning of international reserves, the holding of international reserves, because they know that in the day that we don't have those reserves through the Bahamian dollar ain't gonna be worth squat. And so the Bahamian dollar's backing is basically the US dollar. And the US dollar's backing is basically the good faith of the US government. So if the government of the United States of America produces policies that destroy people's confidence in its currency, it will destroy people's confidence in the Bahamian dollar as well. Because our dollar's value is pegged to that of the US dollar. And so in effect, the monetary policy of the United States of America is basically the monetary policy of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. In other words, our central bank very much has to pay attention to what is taking place in the United States of America relative to the value of that currency because of the implications it would have for the value of our currency. All right. And sometimes as I listen to some of the commentary by folk out there, and these days, honestly, I saw a quote that essentially was saying that longer. It was a video where somebody was explicitly saying how there was a time when people who knew stuff, now they didn't use the word stuff, they used the other word that we use for defecation. Where there was a time when people who knew stuff were listened to by people who didn't know stuff. And so we were able to get stuff done. So, but now we live in a time where people who don't know stuff don't listen to people who know stuff and want everybody to listen to them who don't know no stuff. And now we can't get no stuff done. People who know stuff don't know everything and surely can learn from people who don't know stuff. But the chances of people who don't know stuff really being that informative and helpful in the stuff they don't know is slim to none. Right? That would be like, you have a heart issue and you need heart surgery, do not come to Zhivago Line. Because I promise you, you will die. Because I don't know stuff in that business. Okay? I'm right now helping my son with his BJC studies in health science, and we're learning about the circulatory system and learning about the heart and what the veins do relative to the arteries and what those that double pumping system, double circulatory system. That's basic stuff, man. Basic stuff. That's what I know. You think I could cut your skin, cut through your sternum, open up your chest, get to your heart? I mean, me? You will die. You will die. And I promise you, as he has done, if Dr. Dwayne Sands, who can do all of those things, who knows that stuff, wants to get some information about economic stuff, he calls me. He will ask me. And that's how intelligent people, we don't pretend to know stuff we don't know. We don't get arrogant about stuff we don't know. We ask the folks who know stuff. But not these days. Not these days, Jack. Everybody is now an economist, financial expert, and every other thing because of the internet. Everybody. Well, at least some people think they are. Well, let's see how that works out. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our discussions. We'll be back after this break.
Bank wherever I want, thanks to Scotia Online and Mobile. I bank from my garden. I bank from my living room. I also bank from my kitchen. No need to wait in line. Now when I bank with Scotia, I bank on my own time. Seniors, you too can bank your way any time of day without ever going into a branch. Find out more. Visit bs.scotiabank.com/digital seniors.
Babe, you mashed the car?
I mashed the car. The lady who ran into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care, for every care in the world. To learn more, visit /Caribbean. I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem. Just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio, then Chartacore Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns like 14.76% with our International Equities Subfund. Get access to U.S., Asian, European, and emerging markets without the red tape through our suite of internationally invested funds. Ready to set sail into the international markets? Then contact RF at invest@rfgroup.com to get started. RF, money at work.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today. So after the news break, I'm going to delve into the question as to what is cryptocurrencies. And so I'm going to get into that, but I'm going to lay a foundation for you. In 2009, a mere 13 years ago, Satoshi Nakamoto, an individual or groups of individuals operating under that name, created as a kind of test system something called a blockchain technology, a blockchain, right? And what blockchain is what they call a distributive ledger. So let me give you an example of something. So let's say you use a credit card. When you use a credit card at a store, essentially what has to happen is eventually the credit card company has to check them about the availability of money to be able to make this payment that's being used with the credit card. And then at some point, the store gets paid for that. And then the banking system has to collect that money from the credit card holder, which means that they have to check with the credit card, the person's bank or system or something to see if that money is available, right, and so forth. So in other words, the banking system becomes like the central place to check that things can be paid. Even if it was a check, the same thing has to happen. And that's why at the end of the day, even among banks, you have what they call a clearing system, right? Where they have to kind of balance out all these checks that were written and all these transactions that were done. And so that the central system is checking to make sure all the accounts are divvied up at the end. Ledger records are made of what came in and what came out. We call them debits and credits, right? For doing that, the banking system collects a fee. Okay? Now, what Satoshi Dos did in the blockchain technology is they said, well, I don't need to have a central entity or entities checking anything. What if we created a circumstance in which everyone had access to the ledger? And so that what happens is when a transaction is done, everyone is able, who's on the network, to verify and confirm that the transaction took place, and at the same time, adjust the ledger so that their particular ledger, so that it reflected the transaction. Now, if anyone on the network then decided to change something on the ledger, everybody else would be able to know that something was changed. And unless 95% plus of persons was able to verify that change, then the change was rejected. And for that, we don't need to pay no big, big fee, 7%, 9%, 8%, how about 1%? Now, in addition to all these people on the network being able to verify that the transaction took place without a central entity being involved, what if you had persons who were individually certifying the transactions? And when they certified that transaction, they got a reward for certifying the transaction in the first place. And how do they certify the transaction? Well, there is a random code associated with that transaction on a block. When they guessed correctly that random sequence of numbers or what have you for the code, they would get a reward for doing so, right? If they were able to complete that block. Right? And so what happens is once they do that, they get a token. A token for doing so. And that token is represented by a cryptocurrency. Right? Now, the ability to discover the code, which I guess, which is really a guess, isn't easy because it's a random. And it means that there has to be a kind of computing power. You have an algorithm you have that is able to run through all of these variations of codes until you find the right one. That's computing power. And I mean literal computing power, not only calculation, but the use of energy in doing that. And that's called mining. Mining, you are trying to verify that a transaction actually took place so that you discover the code that gets placed in the chain, and then everybody in the network is able to see, yes, that verification was made. And because of the way the whole thing was structured, the chances of any one person discovering the code, every code, is slim to none. So multiple people become verifiers of the code, and so multiple people are on the thing mining, and they are getting these tokens. Now, there's only a certain amount of tokens that are produced daily, and the maximum amount of tokens, if you're talking about Bitcoin as a cryptocurrency, is 21 million. And that the suggestion is that that 21 million will be arrived at sometime in 2041 or thereabouts. Okay. Now, the way the system was created by is that you can't just go on there and create tokens and distribute them. It can't happen. And so there's no ability to double count, just like you can't really double count fiat currency without fraudulently creating the currency. And And so that creates scarcity, and that scarcity is what ultimately can bring some value to Bitcoins. And when we come back, or cryptocurrencies, when we come back, we'll talk about that some more. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news break.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The city of Miami is waiting for you, and Island Pay wants to take you there. Yes, you heard that correctly. Island Pay is giving away 5 priceless trips to Miami for 2 people just for using your MasterCard prepaid card. Every $30 you spend gets you a chance to win. Whether it's on groceries, gas, diapers, clothes, gifts, online, and other. Move closer to an unforgettable experience in Miami. Don't have an Island Pay MasterCard yet? No problem. Get yours today. And Island Pay will give you $15 back. Island Pay, a better way to pay, a better way to win. Promotion running March 21st to May 18th, 2022. Conditions apply. Visit islandpay.com to learn more.
Samantha's always on point. She doesn't miss a thing. When she signs up for any insurance policy, she reads all the fine print. She knows what's covered, what's not covered, and she's aware of her deductibles. When it comes to insurance, it pays to know your policy. Review every insurance policy so you know what you're covered for. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip, boom, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same
road. Welcome back to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon, where we're talking about money and cryptocurrencies, right? So I started to mention to you before the break that the underlying technology that gives life to cryptocurrencies is called blockchain technology. I talked about blockchain technology in a previous show some time ago. But insofar as the currencies that get created are concerned, they really connect with a certain usage of the blockchain that allows for verifications of transactions that once verified, produced, or allows people to get these tokens, that is, right? And these currencies, you know, they started out costing cents. Now, Bitcoin and those are worth in the thousands of dollars. I think the last thing I saw Bitcoin was trading for $47,000, right? Or something like that. So you know, you got lots of people. Let me give an example of something that I heard. There's a guy who purchased. It may not have been the first transaction involving Bitcoin, but or cryptocurrency. On Bitcoin, it's the first cryptocurrency, so it's the grandfather of all cryptocurrencies. But he's certainly one of the first. He bought a pizza using about 10 Bitcoins, my understanding is. And that those coins, whatever he paid for the pizzas are worth now like 500. Those two pizzas were worth like $500 million. He said they actually have a pizza Bitcoin day or something like that, right? You have another fellow who was the first miner of Bitcoins. He was the first person to mine Bitcoins. And he mined about 7,500 Bitcoins. And my understanding is that his girlfriend told him it was a waste of time. His computer was making too much noise and blah, 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 blah. And he threw the computer away. And now those Bitcoins are worth $400 million. And he has been on the dump trying of the computer because he can't do anything with the code because the code is only resident on his computer because that's the way a distributive ledger works. There's no central authority that keeps a record or copy of what was done on the ledger. So if you happen to find this computer and are able to get and retrieve the Bitcoins he has, you would get $400 million. You'd have a value at least of $400 million. So Bitcoins have become quite valuable. And so what happens now is with that kind of value, you got all kinds of people out there. What do they want to do? They want to buy and sell Bitcoins. So they want to buy and sell Bitcoins. And so some people decided, okay, well, let's have a cryptocurrency trading platform. It's called an exchange, just like any market exchange, just like BizX. Except what FTX did was to add some innovation so that you can margin trade and do all these sophisticated kinds of things in trading that you couldn't typically do with cryptocurrencies on the traditional exchanges. And so that's the big buzz about FTX now, not about cryptocurrencies. FTX is that it is an exchange that allows buyers and sellers to act in the kind of investing ways that are typical of traditional exchanges, with options and margins and all these kinds of things that allow more flexibility in the trade. But now, why is the buzz, though, about cryptocurrencies in the first place? Why is the buzz? What is it about these cryptocurrencies that have people wilding out? I'm not an expert in it, but I'm glad that there's some people who actually spend time studying it. And you are able to benefit from their knowledge. So a group of researchers, Wang and Virginie, looked at this issue. What's the buzz? What is it? They wanted to know, why is it that cryptocurrencies have had a renewed interest? Because remember, it started out with a buzz. Then the buzz died down because some fraudulent things and other things happened. And then the buzz came back up again. And the question is, why the buzz? Now, in ordinary trading, in ordinary economics, many times when you see the price of anything goes up, it's a function of supply and demand. That's what it is, supply and demand. The more supply of something you have, the more the price tends to go down. Why? Because scarcity produces value. And if you have more of something, well, hey, look at how much dirt you had. Nobody's running around picking up dirt, talking about they're going to sell it. But you find some gold in your yard, you sell that. Scarcity. So supply increasing decreases prices. Supply decreasing increases prices. So supply and price have an inverse relationship, as we say. They go in opposite directions. When supply goes up, price goes down. When supply goes down, price goes up. And then demand has a positive relationship with price. As demand goes up, price goes up. Why? So let's suppose there's only one apartment on the island of New Providence, just one. And let's suppose there's only one person looking for that apartment. Well, the owner says, you know, you're the only person looking for the apartment. You know, you say to the owner, and the owner don't have nobody else who could get the apartment. You ask the owner, how much is it? The owner says $1,000 a month. You say, man, I'm not paying that. What's the owner going to do? He can't get the apartment rented. There's nobody else. So he may decide, okay, well, $800? You say, okay, I'll take that. So you drive the price down. Now, let's suppose 10 people now want the apartment. Well, now the owner is in the driver's seat. He says, and as a matter of fact, $1,000 is what it is. Somebody says, so I'll give you $1,200 for it. There's no other apartment. I need 12. Somebody says, I'll give you $1,500 for it. As drive increasing, when supply remains the same, tends to drive up the price. Demand decreasing when supply remains the same tends to decrease the pricing. So when you look at cryptocurrencies, here's a challenge. In the short run, in the short term, over a year or so, cryptocurrencies may have changes in supply because ultimately as you mine more and the mining takes place, if you're looking at Bitcoin in a regular limited fashion, you are going to get an increase in supply. So people might think you will get a decrease in price. I'll explain some later on with that. But the truth is, in the long term, the supply of Bitcoins is fixed at 21 million. So everybody in the marketplace knows that come 2040, there's going to be no more Bitcoins mined, and it's 21 million. And therefore, they can build into their expectation what the value of Bitcoin will be over the long haul. So what those researchers have discovered is that basically supply in the long term will not have any impact on the fluctuating price of, say, Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, because most cryptocurrencies, all of them in fact, have limited supply, and they do that to minimize inflation fluctuations of the currency, right? When you have varying supplies, as you have a fiat currency, it can produce inflationary pressures. And so Bitcoin cryptocurrencies don't want to do that. They want to create stability. But in the short term, you can have people who are anticipating more supply, and then they do things that may cause an adjustment in the price. And I'll explain some of that later on according to this research. So on the supply side in the long term, there should be buzz is happening because everybody knows what the supply is going to be. But on the demand side, you have a different scenario where, because of increasing awareness of, because of movements in pricing, you get more and more people who decide, I want to hold some cryptocurrencies, because there's more mining taking place, more people getting in, et cetera. Maybe there's more demand for the currency, and that can have an effect on the price of cryptocurrency. But here is the thing. The research has found that the demand for cryptocurrency isn't what's driving the price, not the mere macroeconomic or microeconomic demand supply theory that we are accustomed to. That's not what's happening. As a matter of fact, the supply you have of the cryptocurrencies, the price actually goes up. Now, that's contrary to what happens with regular goods and services, where when you supply more, the price goes down. And the reason they suggest that is happening is because what happens is, in the short term, the more you get of these cryptocurrencies, the people who are actually holding cryptocurrencies start to get uneasy, and they get more aggressive and want to hold more cryptocurrency to shore up their position. And so their holding of the cryptocurrency or desire to hold more drives up demand, even though it was induced by supply. Okay? And then they, and so, but what they found is you can't really explain the buzz about cryptocurrencies in supply and demand. That's not what's doing it. You can't explain it by the hype from media. That doesn't explain it either. They allow for that and it doesn't explain. So it, bad press doesn't change the circumstances surrounding cryptocurrencies either. It doesn't do anything to the pricing in any material way. They found that as well. So the buzz about cryptocurrencies is not related to supply and demand movements. It's not related to bad press or media hype, that kind of stuff, but not according to this research. So, well, if none of those things is driving the buzz about cryptocurrency, then what is? What is? What they have found is driving this buzz about cryptocurrencies is the innovative technology of blockchain that underlies cryptocurrencies that give it a unique place. So let me say it again. What they have found is that there is, people are looking at the innovation potential of cryptocurrencies to be transformative in the financial system, and that makes it a positive prospect for the future. What is that innovation potential that cryptocurrencies have? Here's that potential. Cryptocurrencies are introducing into the banking system the ability to make international value transfers, the transfer of asset values much quicker and much cheaper than exist in the financial system today. That's what it is. So whereas you can make an international transfer today and it takes hours, days, whatever it takes, and you're going to have to pay some banking institution or some financial institution or something 9% or 10% or 8% to do that. With cryptocurrencies, you can basically do that for less than 1%. Listen, me and you transferring $1,000 don't see that as a big deal, even though we get that savings. If you are transferring billions of dollars across the globe and you are reducing your payment from 9%, 8% to less than 1%, you are saving yourself hundreds of millions of dollars. Your profitability is going up and therefore things have changed. The banking system is now thinking, oh my God, what are we going to do? We can't compete with that. I got all these bricks and mortar buildings to expense. I have all these employees to expense. I have all these defense. I have all these supplies to expense, etc. I can't charge less than 1%. But if these people are able to make these transfers using cryptocurrencies, that's the game changer. No banking system, no central bank, no nothing. And you were able to make a $1 billion transfer in seconds, have it verified by multiple people so that there is this credibility attached to the transfer. Oh my God, this is a game changer. That is what is getting people excited about the prospects of cryptocurrencies. Now, is that going to pan out? I don't know. But there are lots of people who think so. There are lots of people who think so. As this research says, Ben Bernanke, who was the chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, this is what he once said. He said, innovations such as Bitcoin may hold a long-term promise, particularly if they promote a faster, more secure, and more efficient payment system. And that's the promise of cryptocurrencies. A faster, more secure, and more efficient payment system. And that's what the research has found is really driving the buzz. And listen to me, folks, that financial system that undergirds all trade, that's where the people making the big, big money. Do you know that there is an asset manager in the world that manages $10 trillion in assets? $10 trillion. That's almost like 10%, or basically almost 20%. No, what is that? Let me see. That's about 1% of the whole wealth of the world. One asset manager. Now, all that transaction, $500 trillion worth of transaction taking place in the world, but all of that is being undergirded by finance. And if you can have this finance taking place in the world using a technology that is able to do things faster, more efficient, and less expensive, and more trusted, you're going to change the game. And that is what the buzz is about. Now, will the governments of the world, central banks of the world, sit around and allow this to happen? Remember, the one of the things this research points out is that the mistake that people make is in viewing cryptocurrencies against money as money. That's the mistake. They say, no, it's don't see it that way. What you have to see is cryptocurrency as a technology, meaning as a better way of doing something. That's the real value. That's the real buzz behind it. A better way of trading, a better way of financing, a better way of funding, a better way of international financial transactions. And those who see it are beginning to want to hold these tokens, because these tokens become the means by which you get involved with this technology's transformation of the financial system, if it all pans out. And so what's the big buzz? That cryptocurrencies represent a new technology to enable cheaper, easier, faster exchanges, trade. That's for me and you, for you. Blockchain technology is so innovative and transformative. It could allow ordinary people. See, remember now, a bank plays this role for you. You need money, say, because you spend more of your money than you save. So you wanted to buy a car, you wanted to build a house, you wanted to buy some land, you wanted to school your children, you needed some medical expenses paid, but you don't have the money because you spent your money and I spent my money, don't save that much. And so now that we need $10,000, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, we don't have it. So we go to the bank. Well, no. So, but you don't have it. So we're looking for this money. There are some people out there who are not us. They've been saving their money. They earned it. They saved it. So they have the 10, 50, 100, 200, 300, $400 million. They have it in savings. Now, they don't trust holding that under no mattress. So they put it in the bank. They saved monies. And so you're looking for this money. And if you try to find that person, you couldn't, because people aren't walking around going, hey, I have $1 million to lend. Anybody wants to do that? Nobody does that. And if they even wanted to do that, they need to know you. They got to do all the research to find out, are you credible? What's your history? Blah, 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 blah. They're not going to do that. That's a cost to them, and they're not going to do that. So what they rely on, what you rely on, the borrower and the lender, is a bank that serves as a kind of broker in that whole process. Banks largely make money by serving as an intermediary between the net savers and the net borrowers. They are the information arbiters between those people, and they are able to bring you, the borrower, together with the lender, and say, hey, here's a good fit for you. We vetted the lender, the borrower, and yes, this vendor does have the money, and they bring you together, and you get a loan, and the borrower is able to have its money in the bank you know, making a little bit of money while the bank makes a lot of money because the bank gets a fee for bringing you all together and lending out the man money. They can pay the man on 1% and they can make 7, 8, 9, 10, 12% on the money, but that's the game. That's the way it works, right? and there's a risk to it, so they're taking the risk, so they do that, right? And so that's the role the bank plays. Now, if, though, there is a system that allows you, the borrower, and the lender to come together in a trusted way, because on that distributed ledger may be a profile of you sufficient to confirm through multiple people in the network that, he's a good payer, she's a good payer. Yeah. They're good for her. They got a job here, blah, 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 blah. And that you have the money, they can bring you together without the bank. And so now instead of borrowing for 10%, this lender who had his money on deposit in the bank making 1% could lend it directly to you for 5%, saved 4, 5, 6, 7%. And the borrower, the lender, makes 3% more, and everybody wins through this distributive ledger. That's one of the power and innovative potential of blockchain technology, which is creating some buzz about that technology. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
I bank wherever I want thanks to Scotia Online and Mobile. I bank from my garden. I bank from my living room. I also bank from my kitchen. No need to wait in line. Now when I bank with Scotia, I bank on my own time. Seniors, you too can bank your way any time of day without ever going into a branch. Find out more. To get started, visit bs.scotiabank.com/digitalseniors.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio, then chart a course for RF Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns like 14.76%. With our international equity sub-fund, get access to Asian, European, and emerging markets without the red tape through our suite of internationally invested funds. Ready to set sail into the international markets? Then contact RF at invest@rfgroup.com to get started. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, you can call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We're talking about money and cryptocurrency, especially in the wake of all the buzz about FTX and what they're doing, and the government's interest in digital assets and getting in that space. Let me tell you, I am not in cryptocurrency. I'm not. I don't hold a cryptocurrency. I don't have an interest in holding a cryptocurrency. Well, you say, well, why is that, Shivago, given what you've just explained? Explain them what you know. I'm going to give you several reasons on cryptocurrencies. and think, oh my God, we are going to lose control of the financial system because we are going to lose control of people's value in our fiat currency and all that that would mean for themselves. And the government say, you know, we better get big time in this cryptocurrency business and issue our own cryptocurrencies and so forth and say, you know what, we're going to outlaw every other cryptocurrency. You say, well, the government can't do that. What you mean the government can't do that? You mean the government of the Bahamas can't tell any company in the Bahamas that you are no longer able to operate in the Bahamas because the business you are in is illegal? Or why? The parliament can pass any law, save and accept a law that is in breach of the Constitution. Government could surely do it. There was a time ago in the Bahamas, you go in the banking system and use bearer shares. It's a shareholding in a company that has no name associated with it, and whoever is bearing or holding the share gets the value of that share. All of a sudden, the people in the world say, oh, that's illegal. That's a way to launder money. That's a way to finance terrorism. And all of a sudden, bearer shares is a bad word in the Bahamas and other offshore jurisdictions. And what do? We outrule, we outlaw bearer shares, amongst other things. Why? Because the governments of the world decided, no, can't happen anymore. If they have an international move against cryptocurrencies, what's the long-term prospect for cryptocurrencies? Not good. They'd be driven into the dark web and become on the periphery of life as a major media of exchange. Disappears. I'm not saying that is going to happen, I said, but it's one of the things that can happen. What if something substantial happens that causes people to have less credit, less confidence in the blockchain technology? Whatever it is, we say it's not breakable today, or we know people have breached it, but maybe somebody, because there are always people out there with perverted minds who are always trying to do something to get ahead. And what if they find a way? Then what happens when the confidence in the ledger declines? That's possible. Even confidence in currencies, fiat currencies backed by governments, decline. So the question for all of this is, what is the long-term prospect of cryptocurrencies to rival the world's fiat currencies? Cryptocurrency, global currency, is very, very small. Very small in value. And so it hasn't gained yet that broad-based acceptance as has all these fiat currencies that these governments of the world have gained by the currencies that have been around now for decades. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and wrap it up talking about cryptocurrencies. We'll be back after this break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host.
Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, send me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio, then chart a course for RF Mutual Funds, where you can get global returns like 14.76% with our International Equity Subfund. Get access to U.S., Asian, European, and emerging markets without the red tape through our suite of is set sail into the international markets. Then contact RF at invest@rfgroup.com to get started. RF, money at work.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care, for every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Chicagoland, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. So let me just give you an indication of something. So if you were looking at the market cap of Bitcoins in the United States, that would be around, according to CoinMarketCap, around $557,670,535. Compare that to U.S. money in circulation, right? The U.S. money in circulation is $22 trillion. $22 trillion. Compare the Chinese yuan, the market cap of Bitcoin in China, $939,492,592 bitcoins. The Chinese yuan in circulation, $249 trillion. Okay, so, you know, when you look at currency in circulation compared to the market cap of all cryptocurrencies, you're looking at probably $1.7 trillion. But when you look at those other fiat currencies in circulation, there's no competition. Will and can crypto overtake that? It could happen one day, my friends, but it ain't gonna happen no time soon. And I hear people, dollar and so forth. Yeah, one day the U.S. dollar may decline as a global currency, but it ain't gonna happen no time soon. One day it may, but not no time soon. It's Texas, Mr. Lang. Do you think it's responsible to call FTX and cryptocurrency a scheme as a former minister of finance when we are trying to attract more investors? First of all, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Rebuke it in the name of Jesus Christ, because I never said any such thing. Nonsense. What were you listening to? In point of fact, I said, I'm not calling any cryptocurrency trade a Ponzi scheme or anything like that. Absolute nonsense. Garbage. Learn to listen. absolute nonsense. If I had read that, I probably wouldn't have read it at all. Nonsense. It's not a scheme. I said that they are providing a trading platform, a legitimate trading platform. Absolute nonsense. Don't get me mixed up in your nonsense. That even ain't funny to me. This text says, good afternoon, Brother Lang. I know that cryptocurrency cannot be, correct me if I'm wrong, but you buy them with physical money. After I buy them, can I convert them back to physical currency and put it on my bank account? Absolutely. That's people cash in. Yeah, people cash in their bitcoins, can cash in their bitcoins for fiat currency. Yeah, yeah. Says, great show as usual. I always learn a lot. Keep dropping the knowledge. Yeah, you're welcome. You're quite welcome. Just like any trade, you can cash out. You can cash out. You see, we have some more text here. See, I don't think this buzz has anything to do with whether or not Bitcoin is useful. The original selling point was how secure it was. Then people started hacking Bitcoin networks. This all has to do with the fact that someone is willing to pay you if you're willing to exchange it, which is how everything else works. These millionaires see an opportunity to hold an asset that someone will pay for. They don't really care about Sam's techie explanations. You actually, that's your explanation, but I'm gonna go with the researchers. And the research says that the reason that they have found it for the buzz is the underlying technology, the technology that cryptocurrencies represent in being a way of transferring funds internationally at a faster, more efficient, and cheaper rate. I spent a whole half hour trying to explain that, and you, having done no research, you want to say it's because people are prepared to pay, but people are prepared to pay with US dollars. They're prepared to pay with Canadian dollars. Why isn't there a buzz about those things? You really think that just because I could hold and buy and sell something with something new, that's going to create a buzz for me? Really? Okay, I'm getting that business. I'm going to just produce a currency of my own. It doesn't work like that. Apparently, not from the research. It says, I remember the draw of Airbnb, making money and bypass borders. Facebook ads, how cheap and global market. What did the government do? They said, look at all those people transacting business in a new way, bypassing our tax system. So what did they do? They started taxing in a new way. And that's what will happen to Bitcoin. Governments will innovate to get their money. That is a very good example, actually. A very good example. This text says, Mr. Lang, do you know the Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express? Do you know it is a privately owned entity? Do you know that there is maybe one or two countries whom still own their central bank? There is a lot the people should understand about the fractional banking system and devaluation. Crypto is dangerous. What if networks fail? How will we barter? Ready? Read my text, please. I've read your text, and you don't have to tell me to read your text. I don't often read the text that's sent to me unless people are talking nonsense, right? And frankly, to be honest with you, you're wrong. I mean, the Federal Reserve System is a Federal Reserve System because it's called the Federal Reserve System, and it is. You say it's owned by private entities. Tell me who they are. Please tell me. Go ahead. And don't just quote nothing to me talking about this. Send me proof that it's owned by private entities. I know what you did. You went right online and got that information from somewhere, and now you're spreading that information all over the place. We don't do that. It's the Federal Reserve System. Ultimately, just to educate you a bit, let me educate you a bit. Everything on planet Earth in capitalist societies are owned by private souls. Everything ultimately is. Why do I say that? Even the government of the Bahamas is a trust facility for the private householders of the Bahamas. Everything. Right? So what's your point? But exactly what you're saying. The government of the Bahamas owns nothing. What it owns, it holds in trust for Bahamian people. Who are the Bahamian people? Private souls. So some of you, when you get these sophisticated notions that you think are so fancy, you have to remember You're not the only reader on planet Earth. Right? Now, I just gave you a contradiction to what you said. If you can come back and give me some credible rebuff to that, I'll take it. So I don't want anybody saying, oh, when you disagree with people, when people disagree with you. Wait a minute. When you call my show and disagree with me, what are you doing? Disagreeing with me? This text says, Mr. Lang, what sense is there in me saving $100,000 over 30 years for it to have depreciated? Should I buy gold? I don't like cashless societies. I don't trust a system where even big companies are hacked. If they can be hacked, so can I. I'd rather someone robbing me in person over someone stealing all my money from thousands of miles away. To put our trust and savings in cyberspace is ridiculous and dangerous. It takes away a person's privacy and security. Well, you know, there's lots to consider when you look at the private, at cyberspace and digital technology. There's no question. There is a discussion now about the extent to which governments may go to digital currencies that are programmable. Meaning, I can program into the currency that you can't buy a certain kind of food because I deem that food to be unhealthy. I saw a video about this. And that's true. You know, digital assets can be programmable because they are programs. And so you're right in that regard, that it is possible that the world could be construed in that way. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, you know, but it can. Those things are all possible. It's possible that all this paper money we have could find itself being worth absolutely nothing because prices of things go so wildly out of whack. All kinds of things are possible. The best thing you and I could do is obey God and keep his commandments. If we want to have a long-term comfort in all outcomes, that's the best you could do. You can't guard against all challenges and risk. Says, what is the safest and profitable way to invest money at this time? I don't give investment advice, my friend. There are a number of investment institutions with the capacity to do that. One of them is one of our sponsors on the show, RF. You can check out people like them, but I don't give investment advice. Okay. Says, great show today. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very, very much. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you all have a great evening. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shabar. Talk to you again tomorrow. God spares life.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody.